You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Brought to you by PremierBet Namibia Totes. Create your account now at premierbet.com and use promo code Namibia264. PremierBet, win big, win now.
Welcome to another edition of the Eagle Sports Zone, brought to you by PremierBet Namibia. I'm your host, Hendy. I will be with you until 8 p.m. this evening. So welcome wherever you are tuned in from the world. Welcome to the Eagle Sports Zone. And on today's edition of the Eagle Sports Zone, we will be talking youth sports in relation to the Africa Youth Games that are currently taking place in Angola. We'll be talking about the importance of youth sports. What does youth sports look like at the moment on the continent? And how exactly are the athletes that are currently competing at the Africa Youth Games, how do they get to that stage in their young sporting careers? What are the key environments? What are the key requirements needed to produce a nation of young athletes that shine on the international youth stages and then hopefully in turn shine on the senior national stage? But as always, before we get to that, we will run through some local sports, local and international sporting news. And as always, you are tuned into your number one talk radio station. If for whatever reason you can't listen to us on the radio, don't forget you can tune into us wherever you are on the go in the world, and that is by downloading the Eagle FM mobile application. Free to download on the Google Play Store and the Apple App Store. Simply type in Eagle FM Namibia. Download it and you will be able to tune in to your favorite program from wherever you are in the world. I know we have people right now listening from China, people listening from USA, from Germany, even places in South America, South Africa, of course. So wherever you are, the Eagle can follow you. And also go to our website alternatively, that's www.eaglefm.com.na. And on there, just like the mobile application, you will have access to our podcast section, where if you happen to have missed your favorite show that was on maybe yesterday, maybe last week, maybe last month, or even something you remember from years ago, then fear not. It is available for you in the podcast section. Simply go in the podcast section of the website or the mobile application, type in the name of your favorite show, and you will have access to a wide, wide range of content for you to take in at your convenience. And of course, follow us on all social media pages. That's Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, Instagram, X, LinkedIn, WhatsApp. If you want to follow the WhatsApp channel, the link is on our Facebook page, or simply message 081-200-4144 on WhatsApp and you will get access to the WhatsApp channel link. Now, let's get into some local sporting news. Don't forget, you can call into the studio at any time. That's 083-288-401. That's 083-288-401. If you'd like to chime in, today's trivia question, if you'd like to call in as well to answer the trivia question. Today's trivia question is, can you tell me when and where the first Africa Youth Games took place? Now remember, the ones happening right now in Angola are the fourth. So try to think of when was the first one and where did it take place. The number in the studio is 083-288-401. Now let's move on to some news.
Who won? Who scored? What was the final score? The Eagle Sports Zone Score Roundup is brought to you by PremierBet Namibia Totes. Visit PremierBet.com and use promo code Namibia264 to sign up and win big now.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. Now let's start with some hockey. where Namibia's men's and women's junior teams are playing in the Junior World Cups. The women are over in Chile, over in South America, and the men are over in India. And the men finished in, it's both genders are making their appearance at the Junior World Cup, I should say, as well. And on the men's side, they finished last in the bracket following losses in the 17th to 24 playoffs. And same result for the women, who lost to Zimbabwe in the placement playoffs. Now we also have the Nkosi Cup currently taking place. It's some senior hockey, where on day one the women beat Zimbabwe 7-3, and the men beat USA 6-5. And on day two, the Namibian women beat New Zealand 7-3 again, whereas the men took a loss to Australia 5-3. Moving over to some netball news, the Devonian Desert Jewels concluded their African Netball Cup campaign after a 39-47 loss to Uganda in their final group match. This was in the 7th to 8th place playoff. In the 7th to 8th playoff, the Jewels got back to fine form, defeating Tanzania 51-27 to secure a 7th place at the African Netball Cup. And fun fact, the Desert Jewels actually finished 2nd at the previous Africa Cup. That was in 2023, finishing 7th this time around. So some work to do for the Desert Jewels before the 2027 edition. Moving on to some football news. On the local side of things, in the Namibian Premier League, round 14, it took place yesterday. There was a Young African taking on a Mighty Gunners. Young African taking that one 2-0. 11 Arrows beating Julinho Athletic 1-0. African Stars and UNAM play to a 1-1 draw. And Bucks Buccaneers and KK Palace play to a 1-1 draw as well. Chula Chula picked up 3 points against Okahandja United, beating them 1-0. Life Fighters beating Tigers 3-2. And then you had Blue Waters and Rundu playing to a 2-2 draw in round 14 of the Namibian Premier League. And some round 15 results coming through. Chula Chula picking up 3 points against Bucks Buccaneers 2-0. So that's 6 points for Chula Chula this weekend. Life Fighters beating Young African 1-0. That's 6 points for Life Fighters as well. And that is all we have as far as round 15 for now. Once I get more information, I will provide it as per usual. So coming into round 15, you had African Stars leading the table on 22 points ahead of Mighty Gunners in 2nd on 21 points. In 3rd place was Chula Chula on 21 points. In 4th place, UNAM on 20 points. So the table definitely will be shaken up after this weekend's results. In the bottom three coming into this weekend was Julinho Athletic in 16th, Life Fighters in 15th, and Tigers in 14th. So a crucial 6-point weekend for Life Fighters, who started the weekend in the relegation zone. In terms of other round 15 fixtures that are yet to conclude is we had UNAM against Commerce Nampol, FC Ongosh against African Stars, Mighty Gunners against Tigers, 11 Arrows against Rundu Chiefs, Okahanja United against KK Palace, Life Fighters, Young African, and Chilinho Athletic and Blue Waters. So if we get any results from there, we will be able to update you. And now we're moving on to Europe in the English Premier League. We'll begin with the English Premier League. Starting off the weekend was Liverpool against Brighton. Liverpool taking that 2-0 thanks to a double from a Frenchman, Hugo Ekitike. Chelsea beat Everton 2-0. And Arsenal escaped against the bottom of the table, Wolves, 2-1. Thanks to 2 own goals, actually, in that fixture. And Manchester City took on Crystal Palace, beating them at 3-0. 2 goals from Erling Haaland and a third from Phil Foden. Both players in great form currently. And the table in the English Premier League, Arsenal still in the lead on 36 points. Just behind them is Manchester City on 34. In third place is Aston Villa on 33 points. Chelsea in fourth on 28. On 28 points. And defending champions Liverpool in sixth place on 26 points as well. Manchester United play against Bournemouth. That is tomorrow evening. Should they win, it would lift them to level on points with Chelsea in fourth place. Now, looking across Europe, in La Liga, Barcelona beat Osasuna 2-0. That was yesterday evening to extend their lead at the top of La Liga to 7 points over their arch rivals. That is Real Madrid, who are in action tonight against Alaves. And over in Germany, Bayern Munich plays today against Mainz, with Borussia Dortmund currently taking on Freiburg 1-1 in that fixture. Bayern, as we know, have not lost a league game yet, leading the table by 8 points over Red Bull Leipzig. And that is what we had for today's score segment.
Who won? Who scored? What was the final score? The Eagle Sports Zone Score Roundup is brought to you by Premier Bet Namibia Totes. Visit premierbet.com and use promo code Namibia264 to sign up and win big now.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Brought to you by Premier Bet Namibia Totes. Create your account now at premierbet.com and use promo code Namibia264. Premier Bet, win big, win now.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone, and brought to you by Premier Bet Namibia. Now moving on to the Africa Youth Games currently taking place in Angola, where Namibia has been doing pretty well. We'll get into that in just a moment. But before that, let me give you a brief background, a brief explanation as to what the Africa Youth Games are. Don't forget, today's trivia question is, you have to tell me, when was the first Africa Youth Games and where did it take place? A hint, it did not take place in Southern Africa. This is the second time actually they're happening in Southern Africa, but the first one was not. So call in, tell me at 0832-888-401, and that's 0832-888-401. So back to the origins of the African Youth Games. This continental or multi-sport competition really brings together all 54 African nations and young athletes between the ages of 14 and 17 in usually around 33 different sporting disciplines across. It'll be across various cities, including Luanda, Benguela, and Bengo. The games aim to promote sport, discover and develop talents for competitions such as the upcoming Youth Olympic Games, which are happening in Senegal in 2026. So these Africa Youth Games kind of act as a qualifier for these games as well. And they foster the integration and cultural exchange among African countries, which is, of course, very, very important. And so, because the trivia question is what it is, I won't tell you where the first one took place, but the second Africa Youth Games took place in Botswana, with the third one taking place in Algeria, and the fourth one taking place in Angola right now as we speak. This was actually supposed to be the fifth, but the one in 2022 got cancelled. I assume that would have been a COVID-related reason as to why it got cancelled. But yes, this is the fourth one now happening in Angola, where we have several athletes doing well. We'll start with Lorenzo Esterhazen, a swimmer who won gold in the boys 200-meter butterfly, and he set a new national age group record of 2 minutes 7.2 seconds. So he won gold for us. Then we had Madison Berg won silver in the girls 1,500-meter freestyle in a time of 18 minutes and 21 seconds. Then on the athletic side of things, we had Luma Janssen van Rensburg, who won silver in the girls 100-meter hurdles. Alexandria Sheepers won a silver in the girls high jump. And then Mihesco Fernando won a bronze medal in the boys 100-meter sprint. We're doing well in golf as well, where Team Namibia scooped a silver medal in the golf event. So our youth athletes doing very well at the Africa Youth Games, representing the country phenomenally. In athletics, well, we had a medal, but athletics was dominated by Nigeria so far. They've collected a total of 11 medals just in athletics alone. And those 11 medals consist of 6 gold medals and 5 silver medals. So it seems Nigeria is producing some fast athletes, fast and powerful athletes. We'll see if that translates into the senior sides in the near future. Oh, and then also with the Africa Youth Cup, Youth Games, excuse me, Africa Youth Games. In the first one, the country with the most medals was Tunisia. In the second one, the country with the most medals was Egypt. In the third one, the country with the most medals was Egypt again. And so this now fourth one, time will tell. But Nigeria and Namibia are putting up a good fight so far. It seems to be an event dominated by North Africa. I would have thought South Africa would at least in one of the tournaments be the medal leader. But I found a interesting quote from a member of Team Ghana. Let's see if I can get the exact name, but they spoke to what it is that we are going to be speaking on today when it comes to the Africa Youth Games. They said, the question you ask yourself is, what happens from now? For example, this is the third one Ghana has participated in, and we have the biggest contingent. 70 people are coming. So what happens after that? What is the monitoring? Where are the facilities and where are the programs at home? So essentially what this person is saying, that it's excellent that they're able to send such a large contingent to the Africa Youth Games, but what happens after the Youth Games? How do we ensure that this person that's showing potential on the continental stage at youth level becomes a top athlete at the senior level? Right? So there's many things that go into that pipeline, and some of which they alluded to in their quote when they ask about the monitoring, the facilities and the programs at home. Very important for youth sporting development. And so with that said, on the other side of this musical break, we will take a listen to a conversation about school sports on the continent. Because, as we always say on the Eagle Sports Zone, school sports is where the development is supposed to happen. Why suppose? Because that's where people in this age range are majority of their daytime. Yes, some have access to private academies, but that is not the majority of those participating in youth sports. So when you have a strong school system is when you can start to even think about having a strong youth national setup. So on the other side of this musical break, we'll get into a more professional conversation regarding this, and we'll see each other on the other side of this.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge fata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Thank you.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Brought to you by Premier Bet Namibia Totes. Create your account now at premierbet.com and use promo code Namibia264. Premier Bet, win big, win now.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. As promised, we are now going to listen to a, let's call it a professional conversation, or by a conversation between professionals about the business of school sports on the continent. Why are we looking at the business of school sports and continent? Well, primarily because of the Africa Youth Games, for us to be able to get an understanding of what does it take to produce athletes for a country? What does it take to produce athletes that end up representing the country at competitions such as the Africa Youth Games? Why is it important for a country to be able to do so? How does a country do so? And why does a country do so? And part of that how does a country do so will be answered in this conversation that we are about to listen to between Mr. Thando Bakumeni, who is the head of Supersport Schools, to discuss youth sport on the continent.
And find out what Utando is excited about in the future of school sport. Utando is the head of Supersport Schools, the premier streaming and broadcast platform for school and youth sport in Africa, with over 1 million registered users. Prior to Supersport Schools, Tando was a senior manager for Africa Sport at Supersport, covering a wide range of countries, including Nigeria, Ethiopia, Kenya, and Zambia. Tando started his career in sports marketing at Playmakers. He holds qualifications in sports management and business administration from the University of Pretoria and Wits. I've known Utando for a long time, and in many ways our friendship started because of a mutual love for sport. Utando, it's wonderful to have you here today. Welcome to the pod.
Monde, thanks for having me, man. Been looking forward to this for a while.
Wonderful to have you here. So before we get to school sport and all the rest of it, I want to start by learning about Utando. So please tell us a bit about your family, a bit about where you grew up and your journey that has brought you to where you are today.
Cool. So I was born and raised in the Eastern Cape, in a small town called King Williamstown, which is what is formerly known as the Siskei, in the Eastern Cape. My parents were professionals. Well, my dad is still practicing actually as a medical practitioner in King. My mom was a nurse by profession. And I think, you know, they instilled discipline in us. In fact, my mom, who we lost like a few years ago, was the main disciplinarian in the house. I think, you know, it distilled humility in us as well. And they also valued education, you know, as much as they were professionals, they really sacrificed, for us to go to the best schools that we could go to in the country. And that really instilled, you know, that ethos in us. You know, I'm one of three kids. I've got two younger brothers. And I think there's a lot of principles and values in the way that I was raised that I still try to emulate, you know, with my young family and within my marriage as well, going forward, you know. And I think in terms of like going back to my parents, I think of how, you know, how I'm where I'm at today. My mother played a very big part in that. She was the kind of person who's very protective about her kids. Mm. Also very staunch and pushed to make sure that we make the progress we're supposed to make. As you would know, you know, life can take its twists and turns. You can have some fun here and there. So she brought me back. She was able to bring me back, you know, to the straight and narrow, and my dad, you know, very much the provider. He loved sport. He still loves sport. I think we're fortunate that we didn't have to, well, we didn't have a choice between DSTV subscription or food, because it would have been an awkward decision in that household. Because, you know, sport was everything, and it's very much shaped who I am today. I've loved sport from a very young age, and obviously, you know, with the career path that I'm in now, it's kind of clear how much of an influence that had.
That's wonderful. That's both the tribute to your mother there and the values that she instilled in you, which I've seen in our friendship, the humility and the love for education, which you spoke about, as well as the broader family context. That was lovely to hear. You mentioned your dad loves sport, so I'm keen to dig a bit deeper in that. And you mentioned you have two younger brothers as well. So what are some of the sports teams that are supported in the house? Are there some rivalries, or are you all behind the same teams, and across what sports?
This question usually gets me into a bit of trouble. You know, I my dad supported the All Blacks since I was born. Like, that's all I knew. So I grew up very much a staunch All Black supporter as well. That's changed a bit, you know, in latter years. You know, I think he had his reasons for supporting them as well, you know, with the complexities in the country back in the day. And I think, you know, what has shaped us is that we've seen change in front of our eyes, which is why, you know, now I've softened quite a bit to the Springboks and what they've been building, you know, over the last few years. And I think, you know, my brothers also kind of followed suit when it came to the rugby side. I think you'll hear me speaking about rugby and cricket because it's very much a makeup of the Eastern Cape. Eastern Cape, those are kind of the first loves that you follow. Mm. Football is the global game, so it ends up influencing you. On that front, I'm an Arsenal fan. Thierry Henry pulled me into supporting Arsenal. Again, I mean, that was a very long time ago.
For your sins.
Yes, yes, very much so. And you know, it comes with this fair share of frustration and pain as well. Yeah. But you know, we have some moments, and I think this year or this season might be our season as well.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. And, I mean, that story you speak about from the Springboks being an exclusively white team under apartheid to what we see in front of us today. I mean, it did alienate a lot of people, as you say, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, who didn't support the Springboks at that time, but they've come to represent an entire nation. And it's, I mean, in a short space of time, over the course of our lifetime, it's quite an extraordinary, transformation. So I'm glad we can now go to Springbok games on the same side and supporting the same team.
Yeah.
I'm keen to continue double clicking on you. You've got to give me some more clubs. So you've got Arsenal in soccer, you've given me the national sides in rugby. Mm-hmm. What club sides do you support in rugby and in cricket as well?
I think you're making me dig a deeper hole here.
Go for it. Go
club
for
sides
it.
In rugby, I've always been a Crusaders fan. You know, people think I'm basically a fair weather friend. You know, that's a team that's won the most, but I was a fly half in school. Part of that reason was watching Andrew Mertens from a very young age. And I loved Andrew Mertens. So, you know, that's the team I supported here. And in terms of South Africa as well, you know, I think the soft spots have kind of been from the Stormers and the Sharks. I'm not like a staunch supporter. You know, I don't lie in bed in pain like Arsenal makes me feel if things don't go their way, but I do support those teams, you know, and I think there was always a bit of banter in the households. My brothers supported South African clubs, even though they supported the All Blacks in terms of the team itself, the national team. But yeah, and I think, you know, on the cricket front, Proteas, not so much the club sides, didn't have a massive influence. And then, you know, the funny story about South African football is that if you ask me which team I support, I'll tell you that I support Chiefs. The reason for that
is... You're clearly not a fair weather friend.
Exactly. The reason for that is because my father also supported Chiefs. But the story he told us is that... So he was at varsity in the Eastern Cape. So he did a BSc at Forte. And then when he moved up to Madunsa, up in Pretoria, he stayed with my uncle. So his sister's husband, he stayed with him. And when he got to the house... my sister's husband was a Kaizer Chiefs fan, but my dad was actually an Orlando Pirates fan. And purely because he needed a roof over his head, he was like, he can't play this game. And from that day, from the day he arrived in Johannesburg, he's been a staunch Chiefs fan. He feels the pain, you know, as things aren't going well. So, you know, that's one of the really funny stories from his side. And I guess that's how I identify with the team as well.
We met them through the highs and lows. I share that, love for Chiefs as well.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear then you've, in your journey, you've chosen to focus now at this stage in your career on school sport. So still staying in your childhood, what role did school sport play in your life and your brothers as well?
A very big role. So I think one of my big influences that I was in boarding school from the age of six. It's kind of a scary subject now. And I look at my two young boys and I think, man, they'll be six quite soon.
They've ended that practice. My sisters were also in boarding school. Three of my sisters from grade one.
Yeah,
they've ended that practice.
Indeed, you know. I loved every minute of it, but I don't think I'll send my kids to boarding school when they're 6 years old. But but obviously, we then partook in sport like right from the beginning. Like, I think that's why I loved cricket so much when I started, because you just sit there and you just practice and practice and practice. They tell you you've got a throwing action, so now you've got to make sure that it's a round arm technique. So we played from a very young age, and it also just, it instills discipline. Like, you need to be at a certain place at a certain time. Mm-hmm. It comes with teamwork as well. There are leadership lessons that you learn as well. You know, when you're fortunate enough to be leading a very young team, I think at that age, you don't really know like what you're doing, but you know how to act in that role, you know, and it really instills that discipline going forward. And I think it influences how we do things even now, at our age and with our careers.
Absolutely. For me, the biggest lesson that I've taken for life from school sport, which, as you know, it is a big part of my life as well, is not being able to do something, practicing at it, and then getting good at it, which I think life is a series of just repeat doing that on different topics as you go through life. Mm. And having the confidence to know that, no, man, I don't know how to do this now, but there's someone who does know how to do it, who can teach me how to do it, and then I've just got to practice.
Exactly.
And I can, there's nothing that's, you know, entirely beyond me. I haven't yet gotten to theoretical physics or anything like that. So maybe I'm still to discover the things that are beyond me. But by and large, going through life, it's played a big role in my life. The final question then that I'd ask just on you first before we come to super sport and school sports, is just when you look over your whole journey to date, what do you consider some of the most formative experiences in your life so far?
I think, yeah, it stems from home again. You know, I think the boarding school part that I just mentioned is a very big part of that. Mm. I think that independence that came from that as well, you know, we've been basically operating and looking after ourselves from a very young age. And I say ourselves because I was thinking of my brothers as well. And that was a very big influence. In terms of the educational part, that was my parents. They were obviously making sure that, listen, you know what's important and what is not, and what can basically aid you in your career growth going forward. And then the sport part, I think I spoke about it extensively now with my dad, you know, and he knows it as well. The other day I'd forgotten what I sent him, like in terms of something we recorded at work, and I sent it to him. And I think you may resonate with this, that with our parents, if you're not a doctor or lawyer or accountant, you know, if you're saying you're studying sports management, it's, what's that?
No, you've been adding three. There's two careers. There are two careers. Oh, actually, I was ready. Yeah, two careers. You're either a doctor or you're a failure.
That's it. You know, so, you know, I said I study sports management, and I said, you know, I was in sports marketing agency, and every single time I would go home, what do you do again? And they'd name a brand that was one of my clients and say, aren't you at that place? So they never quite understood it, but now that, you know, I'm at SuperSport and obviously we're doing what we're doing, now he completely understands, and now there's a massive sense of pride, you know. So when I sent him a clip of an interview that I did, the first thing he said, he's like, you know, he's very emotional. And he says the emotion's coming from a place of knowing why I'm in the field that I'm in. And obviously that's attributed to him and his love and love for sport. Yeah.
That's beautiful. Honestly, that's wonderful to hear. And thanks for sharing openly about both your family, your context, and what's brought you to this point to be the Thunder that we know. So let's move on then to some of the main topics for discussion in school sport. Let's just start right at the beginning. What is Super Sport Schools and what does it do?
So Super Sport Schools is a youth and school sport broadcasting platform. And I say youth and school because obviously looking at the name of it, people could think that we only cover school sports. But from a youth perspective, we also cover organized sport, from a club perspective, from a federation perspective. And that's all broadcast and streamed, within the platforms that we have. So it started off with just the app. So Super Sport Schools app, which is very active now. Anything that we stream or produce is actually found on that app. And again, that's harnessing the power of aggregation. That's a common theme within the multi-choice, building. Multi-choice ethos. And then what happened is that it started evolving as well. We've got a channel now, a DSTV channel 216, which is obviously the linear that we do there. But obviously, if you think about the scale that we produce at, there's only a number of feature games that can go on that channel. So that's selected on a criteria, but there are various aspects that we need to consider. The reason we're able to do what we do is because we harness the power of technology. COVID was a very, very torrid period of time, but what it did is that it also sped up the technological advancements at the time. So we use AI cameras, which are obviously fully automated, as the name suggests. But what we can do then is that there's a massive reduction in the cost that we incur in terms of producing these games. We don't only use AI cameras. There's a mix of what we call like 2-cam or 3-cam. For example, if you're watching like a Soweto Derby, that can go up to like 18-cam. Mm. But indeed, the reason we're able to do what we do is because the reduced costs allow us. So we reduce the spec. And what we're providing for people is what they didn't have before. And that's why I speak of the aggregation part, because it aids discoverability. Because before, yes, people were streaming some games. I mean, back when we were in school, some people had video cameras and obviously recording some of the games that we had, but it was very hard to find them.
It's usually a very keen parent.
Exactly.
Rather than anything.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But now you go to one place, you go to SuperSport Schools app, and obviously you can then, find everything there, which is produced at scale.
Okay, that's fascinating. And I'm going to come back to that technology point, because I'm quite interested in, and fascinated by that. Mm-hmm. But just still on the context of what you do, what geographies do you cover? Sporting codes do you cover? What's proven popular? Is it boy sport only, girl sport only? Is it mixed? Give us a bit more of the color.
Very much mixed. So boys and girls right across the board. In terms of the geographies that we cover, we're primarily in South Africa. We've covered in Zimbabwe and Namibia. But if you think of the landscape of multi-choice, it's obviously sub-Saharan. So we have great ambitions to cover sport right across the continent as well going forward. In terms of the most popular ones, I think you'd have to look at the winter season. The winter season is obviously massive. Rugby leads the way. That's just because of the South African schoolboy system or schoolgirl system as well. But it's followed up, it's obviously supplemented by hockey and netball, which is very big. We, in terms of sporting codes, like, yes, the winter season is popular, but 2024, we covered over 50 sporting codes. That's a wild number. Like before I was involved in the system, it's like, how are there more than 50 sporting codes, you know?
But so help me understand. It's like singles tennis, doubles tennis. Are those two sporting codes?
Not at all.
Tennis as well.
Not at all.
How cute
that's
are you
tennis.
Getting in the definition?
That's tennis. But if you think about it, it's the rugby, crickets, footballs that we all know, hockey. But it ranges from things like softball.
Yes.
Like some people may not know there is softball activity in this country. All the way up to like sheep shearing.
Sheep shearing.
So multiple sporting codes that are covered. Obviously, like in terms of criteria, we have to select where we go, because it's the kind of thing that, as much as we'd love to cover a lot, we can't get to everything. But we also acknowledge the development that has taken place and the work that's been done in a very short space of time, because SuperSport Schools has been going since 2021.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's extraordinary. Since 2021 and over a million subscribers already.
Yeah.
That's extraordinary growth. Mm-hmm. And I'm intrigued. You cover 50 sporting codes, which is a lot wider than I expected. Mm-hmm. Is this limited to physical sports? Is there esports as well? Does that fit within your mandate?
So it's definitely not limited to physical sports. Esports is actually not new to the SuperSports table. So what I mean by that is that we actually had a dedicated esports channel at one stage. And now we've started going into it again. I mean, there's no ignoring esports. If you think of the African landscape, you know, and the increase in internet penetration as well, it's really aiding that to grow. We know that it's going to get to a place where you actually have to be in the game. On the SuperSport School side, again, I spoke about content aggregation. So we're not just producing and streaming, but it's about having the content on your platform as well. And we've got an esports magazine show called Gameplay, which plays on a weekly basis every single Thursday. And there, effectively, we get content from some of our partners, gaming publishers like Carry First, ACGL that we work with as well. There's content that they cover, I mean, on almost like a daily or weekly basis. So you get the athletes that come onto the show as well, speak to the activity that they have, and we cross to content that is basically taking place across the continent. And it's not just esports. Like with SuperSports sports schools, and I think it may be actually counted in the sporting codes and everything. We also cover cultural elements. So think matric dances, debate meets, that kind of thing, concerts, which can also be very popular. Obviously, I mean, that's also down to just the loyal base that we have, where people are watching their own kids or own family members.
Oh, that's just far wider, as I said, than I expected.
Yeah.
So before we dive further in this, please give us just a sense of the context of what role does school sport. You can pick a sport and pick an example of a fixture, for instance, in these geographies you cover, so mainly South Africa. What role does it play in the community? Give me a bit of a sense of this. Is this 500 people around the table, 25,000? Give me a sense of what role it plays.
It is massive. And I love the fact that you asked me this question, because just recently I went down to Paul Inter Schools, which is the biggest school boy derby in the world.
Yes.
And that's between Paul Boys High and Paul Gym. So
Paul Gym.
Sorry. You're definitely correct. It is definitely correct. But I went down there for the first time. I've obviously heard about this derby many times before. 25,000 people coming to watch the first team game. It actually can't be hosted at one of the schools. So they hosted at the Borland Stadium. But it's not just about the rugby. Like, you enter the town, like on the Friday, there's assemblies and everything where each captain, sporting code captain, goes up and speaks. Mm. The chess captain is speaking to the rugby captain, you know, they're basically saying, listen, guys,
Win big, win now with PremierBet Namibia Totes. Get a 200% sports bonus of up to 2,000 Namibian dollars. Sign up now at premierbet.com and use promo code Namibia264. PremierBet, win big, win now. Win big, win now with PremierBet Namibia Totes. Get a 200% sports bonus of up to 2,000 Namibian dollars. Sign up now at premierbet.com and use promo code Namibia264. PremierBet, win big, win now.
The festive season is a time for traveling, a time to reunite and celebrate with loved ones. But most importantly, it's a time to obey the road rules. Check your tires, wear your seatbelt, drive sober, adhere to speed limits, and walk responsibly. Do the right thing and save lives this festive season. Your family awaits.
This message was brought to you by the National Road Safety Council.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Brought to you by PremierBet Namibia Totes. Create your account now at premierbet.com and use promo code Namibia264. PremierBet, win big, win now.
Got this game, like that kind of stuff that you don't expect to see. And the town comes to a standstill because you drive in and the trees are wrapped in the different colors. So you got Khim colors, you've got Boys High colors, you've got the girls school colors. And it's just a sense of anticipation that builds up right up until the first team rugby game.
Mm.
And the game itself was an amazing advertisement for rugby. Mm. It was back and forth.
I watched it actually.
Yeah.
It was tight right until the end. It was a wonderful game.
Indeed. It was amazing, you know, but that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about. Everyone is wearing their jersey or their old school ties. Everyone is within the culture of it. And it doesn't just stop there. Like, it's not just schools, actually. Like, if I think of the club scene, on the football side, you know, we also cover GDL, so Gauteng Development League.
Yes.
And one of our biggest viewed games last year was under 13 game between Sundowns and Chiefs. Obviously, biggest clubs in the country.
Under 13.
Wow. With over 220,000 people tuning in on the Sunday morning.
Wow.
So it really
that
is.
That would be
culture.
More than a lot of PSL games, some of the smaller PSL games, no?
220,000. Yes. Yeah.
That's surprising.
It's massive.
Okay. Look, I've seen this firsthand, what you're describing. The town in Paarl comes to a standstill.
Yes.
And that's not limited. Obviously, the Paarl Derby is very special, but that's not limited to there. You see it all over the country, on a Saturday or even on a Friday the day before. Parents, those rivalries run deep, and the students themselves and these, you know, carry on through life. So it plays a big role in the community and in unearthing talent. Now this culture, you've actually just started touching on it. So, is it limited to sort of very wealthy, elite, private schools, or do you find it even in, let's say, non-fee paying schools, the level of sports participation and the impact that it has on the community involvement and the people coming to watch?
So what the wealthy schools benefit from is pretty much the infrastructures that are in place, and obviously the history of having organized sport and everything that is put in place, from the facilities themselves to the teachers or coaches in place, right?
Yeah.
But it's certainly not restricted to them. There's a lot of coverage that we have in all sorts, all parts of the country, rural, urban, everything under the sun. And it's also like there's specific references that I can actually draw. You know, I think of the Western Cape Education Department. So they've got this MOD program. So MOD is mass participation, opportunity and access, and development and growth. That's what it kind of stands for. But effectively what they've done is build these shared facilities. So if you think of schools like in those areas of the Western Cape, there's no sports facilities on the schools. Mm. So there's shared facilities that the kids then get access to as like extramurals after school. Mm. And there are over 180 of those facilities, over I think 40,000 kids take part. And they've obviously got community workers that are closing in on 1,000 that actually volunteer to make sure that they can facilitate this. And on the premises, what you'll find is astroturfs, you know, court sports, swimming pools. So it's all administered, and obviously it has great benefits because some of the schools, as I said, don't have access to these elements, but by giving them access, obviously then they get to benefit from the benefits of sport, taking part in sport, which probably the most important one is keeping kids out of trouble, because with dead time, you can get up to mischief as well. But it's a responsible initiative. And what we do is that even though we can't come on like all the time and sponsor or fund these initiatives, what we do have is the mouthpiece and the platform.
Mm.
So we amplify these when they have an opening of facilities. We're there to capture the content. We've got various marketing platforms that we can obviously utilize for them as well, give them space in our newsletter, which can also help them attract the funding that could obviously enhance what they're trying to do.
That's phenomenal. You know, I spend a decent amount of time on the real estate side of education, and to put up now a private school with you know, all the sports fields and the swimming pools and all of that in South Africa is probably around 120 million rand. So I think it would be unrealistic if we felt that that's going to be the model that's going to replicate for all kids to play sport. So I haven't actually come across this MOD program, but it's exactly what you need: the shared facilities, and then the actual schools are a lot cheaper to build. It's sort of an admin block and an academic block, fairly straightforward. But it gives then separately kids the opportunity to participate in sport. So that's wonderful to hear, and the work you're doing as a mouthpiece for that as well. So let's talk then a bit about unearthing talent, and I want you to make this real for me. If you can find me one example, let's pick one example for me of a child that you've seen on the Super Sports Schools app, knowing it's recent, 2021.
Yeah,
so all very recent, but who has gone on to either play professionally or you feel is on the path to go and play professionally.
There's actually quite a few. We're fortunate in that regard, you know, because obviously this is a question that comes up the whole time. And it also actually comes up because of why Super Sports Schools came to life. And it dates back all the way to 2019. You know, some of our leaders at the time were watching the Rugby World Cup, the one that we won, obviously, with CS team the first
time. Which one?
I'm a Springbok fan now. CS first one, you know. And they had an earnest discussion around how, guys, we're watching the Springboks, they're successful, but the only reason they're successful is because of the schooling system and the rich schooling culture and sports culture that we have in South Africa. And if you think about it from a super sport perspective, if we aren't aiding that level underneath, who are the sports stars that you're going to see or subscribe for on Super Sport as well to actually watch later on in life?
Mm.
So decisions were taken then, and the guys moved fairly quickly. Obviously, there were a few hiccups here and there because of COVID, but they eventually got started. But the whole thing, the whole premise of it was unearthing talent.
Mm.
And if you look at the platform now, you know, there's two or three that I could even name now. A guy like Riley Norton.
Yes.
Who just captained the...
Phenomenal. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You know, captained the rugby under-20s to a world championship. And the year before, he was playing SNR 19 cricket, also on our platform. I think of Gwena Mapaga. who was obviously, as a schoolboy, called up, was playing IPL. At the end of that year, was a pro tier already, and he's starting to be a regular within that squad now. Bayanda Walaza, hopefully we're going to see him in the World Championships this year. He won a silver medal at the Olympics as a schoolboy. So it's incredible stories like that. It's just, I mean, that's just three people that I've touched on, but there are quite a few more that I could speak of, and quite a few more we're going to see in the next couple of years as well.
That's absolutely wonderful. And I like as well that you address different sporting codes in there as well. You've got athletics, you've got cricket, you've got rugby and cricket in the same person in one instance. Well, they've already achieved so much and looking forward to seeing what they continue to achieve. So I think they're excellent examples of people that have gotten exposure from your platform and are going on to do amazing things for their sports and for the country. If I take then school sport, I think of it in two ways. It has a supply side, so the matches that are being played, many of these is there, and then also there's the demand side, which you can come to. So how many people want to watch these matches? But if I just start on the supply side, I saw a statistic that in 2024, so last year, you filmed 60,000 sports matches, which is a hell of a lot, right? So give me a bit of color on the supply side of this. You've already spoken about how many different sporting codes there are.
Yes.
But just 60,000, is that, in your view, a drop in the ocean? Is that as high as we're going? Just how big is the supply side of this market?
I think that's exactly where I was going to land, is that it's just a drop in the ocean. You know, we know that we're the biggest player in the market and obviously producing at scale, but there's so many that we don't get to. And obviously there's a multitude of reasons as to why not. But the stat that you're talking about as well, I mean, it's over 58,000 hours of live content, last year. If you're thinking from an event and school perspective, it's like 3,500 schools that we got to, and that's across 4,500 events. So we know that we got to a lot, but at the same time, there's so much more because we see it all the time. We see that, okay, fine, some people are trying to stream onto their own platform. Some people are requesting from us, and you know, there's a balance before the business itself that we're trying to make sustainable, and that, okay, fine, sometimes we don't actually have the capacity to do it. Mm. And I think the trend is the same globally. You know, there's a recent Pixelot analysis that I saw, speaking about, I think 27 million Americans are taking part in American youth sport. And 85% of those went uncovered in 2023.
Sure.
So it's a drop in the ocean. I think that it's across the board. I've said to you, we've got ambitions to obviously look further in the rest of Africa as well. Mm-hmm. And there aren't any big players like us, in terms of streaming and actually broadcasting youth sport. So we're very excited about that journey ahead.
Okay. That's, if 60,000 is a drop in the ocean, I'm looking forward to seeing what comes. And if I come over then to the demand side, right? I mentioned up front in the introduction that SuperSport Schools has over 1 million registered users, of which I am one, adding to the numbers. So how large do you think the market is in terms of how many people want to watch school sport?
It's a very difficult one to answer, is that, like, I mean, the exact quantification, right? Mm. We've grown very quickly and we acknowledge that. I mean, it's great that we over 1.3 million subscribers at this point, or registered users. But I think it's a mix between the two, because earlier we were talking about the people that are physically on the ground. And there's a stat saying, listen, there's probably around 1 million parents that are at fields every single Saturday across South Africa, wow, watching their kids play sport. So there's that part, and then there's the part where we're providing access, where you can be in Johannesburg and watch your daughter play in Cape Town. So we know that the demand is
there. Or you can be in New York and watch your old school play.
Exactly.
Durban,
exactly. Exactly, you know. So the demand is massive. I think another crazy stat, and I know that I've kind of been churning them out now, but last year we had over 2.8 billion minutes of content consumed on our platforms. So it's very hard to actually quantify that and make it like practical. So it's still going to grow. Where it may plateau, we don't know yet. But what we're thriving on is providing that access. And I like the fact that you touched on the fact that you could be in New York, and watching someone play here in South Africa, because what helps is that our app is actually available globally. So you can log onto the app and you can watch. We see that I think 8% of the content, or the consumption, came from outside the country. Again, it's like neighboring Southern African countries, but hits in the US, hits in the UK. And I think that's also just an indication of a few things. Like some of the things are expats, that are obviously trying to tune in. Some is just a general interest in youth sport. And I guess, you know, I think another part of it is that we're seeing more and more, I don't want to call it the professionalization of youth sport, but, you know, scouts are interested, you know, people that are watching from overseas. We've seen in athletics how many of our youth actually go across to US varsities as well. And they're engaging through our platform to actually find, people that would obviously be suitable for what they're trying to drive that side.
Look, I remember we were at school at exactly the same time. So I'm sure you will too. But if you wanted to, let's say, go study in the US and play golf or whatever the case may be, you needed an agent who comes and makes a highlights reel of you and all your stuff and then takes it abroad. So this is the kind of exposure that it doesn't quite bypass the agents. There's still a role for them in here overall. But it massively makes it easier to discover talent on a global basis. I'm excited to see what's going to come of that. The other point that you mentioned here, you've said a lot of statistics, but one that stuck with me was 3,500 schools that you went to last year, which is that's massive. That's absolutely massive. So I'm intrigued by this. You know, SuperSport is a business. Yes. You have a P&L, you have listed shareholders, so you can't be doing it all for free. You know, we all see the social benefit, the community benefit, the benefit to unearthing talent and those individuals. So we see all of that benefit. But how do you generate revenue and how does this model work, going out to, as I said, 3,500 schools in a single year? How does that work?
And I guess the interesting part is that we're very different from everything else within the multi-choice stable. You know, when you subscribe to DSTV, you pay a subscription fee, you pay per month, whereas we are absolutely free. So you can download the app, you can access it.
Oma wa o tomono okutako NHP. Genge wa longify longifo lili pedu lo wawo haku. Olo halipiti kwa efiku ne fiku. Mefiloshi shelo haku oe. O wa washi mali wawo shosha kupako. Washika wet gelwa komto alando lako. Kashi, koma punglo e na shano unjolo welewe. Oto dulu okulongifa oma wa oe. Wa hupuko, opo una miti toshiningi momikalo dihapungashi. Okufuti lapo oi mali wa ishona. Oyo hodulu okupu. Polwa uli futila ove mwene oma yakulo olu hapu hakala ina kwa telwa mo wawe kwa follow elo unamiti ile oto julu no kuli okupiti fapo e mwe didonumba tokala ino futa e akulo lo elo unamiti kwa uyalele uhapu talela po nhp.com.na ema ngono malandola fwana ododi na okulandolwa NHP rooted in care for you.
Your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
Because we're based on a purely AVOD model, so advertising video on demand, and our whole purpose is to say, okay, fine, we want to give people access to youth sport, we're going to produce it at scale, but we're also going to offer brands the opportunity to engage with the viewers or consumers on that platform. I think I briefly touched on now how loyal that base is. It's the most intensely loyal that you are probably going to find right across, because you're talking parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, peers. Opportunity for brands to engage. In terms of how everything is structured, again, if you think about the traditional sense, when you're watching sport on TV, you'll get the traditional L bars, which are called like squeezebacks, logos on screen. That's how we sell there. But ours is more dynamic. We have some action triggered elements that come through. So if you think of a goal in a football game, a try, then you get an ad coming up. Okay. We obviously mix that up with things like 30 seconders, which are more traditional. And then we have non-live content, like magazine shows, which also offers a space there. And it's very diverse in terms of the range. Like we don't really limit it. You know, you get clients that come in and spend in the hundreds of thousands. Some of them spend all the way up to 12 million. And obviously the period that they come on and they're part of our partners in commercial sales obviously differs from team to team, but we have a full sales force that goes out to actually to make sure that we make those sales and driving to a place that we're making our product sustainable.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. That's very clear. And that then, so that I understand the revenue side, the cost side. You touched a little bit on the use of technology and AI cameras. I said I'd come back to it. So, yes. So talk to me. How do you limit the cost side to get out to so many schools, and still make the economic model work?
Yeah, it's a balancing game. It definitely is, you know, and we mix up. That's why I said, you know, in terms of technology, we've got the AI cameras, but we've also got traditional, more of a traditional spec. Okay. What happens is that it's actually very closely linked to some of the revenue partners that we have. I'll give you an example of the King Price Derby series, which took place this year, that Paul Interschools actually fell under that property. And that's a different model to what we've done before. Mm-hmm. And that's again aimed at sustainability, because what you saw before is you saw derbies that are televised, but it was very few. It was kind of the big traditional schools. Whereas we made it more inclusive this year. So we partnered up with Pro Vantage Sports. They got King Price coming on as a title sponsor. So they raise sponsorship funds on their sides, which obviously covers the production cost, but it also then gives us an indication of what spec we can actually go at. So it's not, it wasn't just AI cameras. That was a few camera spec, like 5 or 6 camera spec that we used in those games. But that's because it was offset within this model, against the revenue that was coming in. So it's going to differ from each decision that we actually make. And obviously, I mean, with starting a business, you're going to ramp up the cost because you need to build the platform and then draw in the revenue. Yeah. But we're trying to make sure that we close that gap as we go along.
It's the classic chicken and egg in business.
Exactly. You've
got to make a start and go and get, and the growth is phenomenal. Yeah. In the time since we last caught up and this conversation, you've gone from 1 million to 1.3, 30% growth. So you know, you still continue, even though it's at a big scale already. Yeah. Continuing to grow. And you've touched on in several parts of the conversation, several partners that you work with, the advertisers you've just touched on. I think it was Pro Vantage Sports, which you mentioned. Anything else you want to mention on the broader community or set of partnerships around this?
So we've got a very big stable of commercial partners. They range in terms of what they target in terms of the advertising. Mm. Take a Lot is a very big partner of ours. And how it usually works is that we talked about content aggregation, but also aggregation across our revenue partners. Mm. So all of our properties, you know, the revenue partners get allocations where you can get their exposure and obviously appeal to the consumer. But there's some of them that jump on and obviously target a certain niche. For example, Spur sponsors Gauteng Development League, as well as our podcast. You've got Thirsty that sponsors our rugby magazine show. Mm. So some of them are very targeted, and I've obviously just spoken to King Price as well now. But again, as I said, it ranges, and I think, you know, the opportunities that are offered to them, they can tailor, and things are getting, you have to think more these days. Mm. I mean, right across the board in business, right? Way back in the day, it was kind of logo on screen and that's it.
Yeah, you know? Just could be better.
It's exactly. So we're curating content with our partners, which is what makes it very attractive for them. So we know what the kind of appeal that they're looking for. If you're talking about Uber Teens, obviously our platform engages with that audience, but they're driving a responsibility message. So how are we engaging with them to actually curate content that speaks to the responsibility part and how to use things safely? So it's really evolving, but you know, it's an exciting space to play in. And we've got, there's so much opportunity, even within the content that we produce now. We've still got plenty of space to get some more sponsors on board as well and obviously curate according to their needs.
Okay, that's wonderful. I must thank your sponsors because there's a school that I saw this year on SuperSport Schools for the first time and tracked, but I'd never played against them. I mean, I'd heard of them, but never thought of them as a big rugby school. But this year, watching Gersfontein was something truly special. Yeah. And I never would have had that opportunity, but that's the kind of exposure which you see. And it was an electric rugby
team. That's the power of it.
Really. Exactly. Yeah. Electric. This was the first time that I'd seen the school play rugby. Another topic that I'm keen to discuss is the subtle balance that's needed here. Some of these children, like those who you've described, Bando Alaza, some of them are going to go on to be superstars, going to go on to be professionals in their various sporting codes. And some are not, but maybe like us, I think we'd be good examples of that. We partook in the schoolboy rugby, in the schoolboy sports system. Yeah. But we're in varying careers at this stage and, you know, that has informed our journey, but we didn't go the professional path. So, How are you managing this balance to not overly professionalize school sport?
It's It's a very good shout, because I think what we do is kind of a double-edged sword, because we're trying to drive as much exposure as possible. But on the flip side, there's some pressures and adverse effects that could come with that, you know, providing that spotlight right across the board. So what we try to focus on is driving a positive narrative throughout. So they're going to be success stories of kids that are actually trying to make it further in life. But the message that we drive is positivity. It's inclusion and participation in sport. It's celebrating people coming together through sport. Mm-hmm. It's celebrating providing access to it. And I think a very big part as well is actually some of the ancillary content that we have, because we've got our live content and non-live things that we produce and stream, right? Like live games and magazine shows. But the user-generated content in youth sport is everything. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing that we amplify. If you think the war cries that you see all the time, it's amazing to see, you know, it goes viral and everything. But there's also some good causes that the schools are taking up, not initiated by us. So they'll raise mental health awareness, fighting against GBV, you know, and what we do is that obviously as partner schools of ours, we make that connection with them and we amplify and use the platform that we have to drive that positive message.
Mm. Oh, that's wonderful. And something I'd add on what you're saying is the breadth of what you cover as well. So it's not only celebrating those who are on the field, but I'll take the example of there's the young commentator from Dale College.
Yes.
who's just finishing matric as we speak, who has gotten a phenomenal platform. Yeah. He's one, phenomenally talented himself as a commentator, but a platform which, you know, it would have been known in his school, maybe a few other schools around there. This talent that he has now is a nationwide phenomenon.
And it's great to see that passion, you know, that passionate development that he's made. He's very passionate about super sport schools, about his career and what he tried to do going forward. So it's really good to see.
Yeah, exactly. So it plays, there's a role for everyone, basically, that inclusivity you're talking about. It's not the one or two superstars only that are going to go as professional sports people. So if we put on our hats now and we're looking forward, what are you excited about in the future? It could be school sports, could be sports innovation. What are some of the things that you're excited about?
I'm excited about how we need to continue evolving. I think I spoke about the technology part. You know, that's why we got ahead of the game, because we actually embraced it. Mm. But at the same time, you know, we've got to keep evolving according to what is happening out there. Mm. We're still the biggest player in the market when it comes to Africa, but there are other players like us popping up across Europe, in the States as well. What are they doing? What are those global strategies that we could pull from and, you know, incorporate on our side? To make sure that we stay at the forefront of this. I think, you know, looking forward, it's also kind of making sure we find that balance, because the balance part is like, yes, we want to advance, but we need to remain responsible, drive a positive narrative. Mm-hmm. How are we going to balance that? How are we going to get to a place where we're proud of the platform growing, but we're making sure that everything around that is positive as well. Mm-hmm. So it's the evolution of it all.
Just keep them off social media. If you want to keep things positive, keep them off Twitter, keep them off TikTok.
You know, but and again, that's why I say double-edged sword, because, you know, there's that messaging, then there's, okay, we've got user-generated content that we want them to engage with on the social platforms.
So that's where the engagement would come
from. Yes, exactly. So I'm very excited about the evolution of it all, where we land, how we can keep on growing. Obviously talking about Africa as well, you know, the opportunities that are there, and where we can take this to.
Okay, that's wonderful. Look, those, some of that user-generated content is quite special. I've seen some of those highlights reels of Alzidan Felix, Zagatelo Siaya, some of, you know, schoolboys who are becoming household names.
Some of them make it global. I don't know if you've seen Will Smith remixing a song where it was a war cry from the side. It's amazing stuff. You know, Drake reposted Northwood war cries.
Oh,
showing your true colors there. So it's really global, you know, and that's the power of it all. Yeah.
That's absolutely wonderful to hear. Timrat, I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation on school sports. It's taken me back down memory lane in many ways, but also into the future, because everything that you're describing here, the use of technology and where this is going, is very, very exciting. So wishing you well on this journey, and we'll continue to subscribe and support and watch the videos and go to some of these schoolboy matches in real life as well. So as I come off then the topic of school sports and come back to Uthando, back to where we started with you.
We'll be right back.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Brought to you by Premier Bet Namibia Totes. Create your account now at premierbet.com and use promo code Namibia264. Premier Bet, win big, win now.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. And there we had a insightful conversation between the head of Super Sports Schools over in South Africa and doing an interview talking about the magnitude of school sport in South Africa. And it was quite interesting to, you know, as it was going to hear them list high school athletes like their regular household names. And that is how that's how stars get made, really. Is when the media picks up or reports on these youth events, puts them out into the limelight for the general public, and then the stars that naturally emerge, people naturally gravitate towards. And that's how national icons are born and created. And so South Africa for a long time now has laid the blueprint in terms of youth sports. Really, they've gone to the extent of commercializing youth sports, as we've heard now from this gentleman, the head of Super Sports Schools. But I wanted us to get a listen to that just to get an idea of what things at the highest level look like, even when we're talking about simply youth sports. And that is why at most youth sports tournaments we see our southern neighbors dominate. But on the other side of this, we'll get into another short conversation before we round up for this evening. We'll be right back.
Get ready to embrace a world of possibilities at the University of Namibia with a community of ambitious students, researchers and innovators. Shape your future with a wide range of programs in agriculture, engineering, natural sciences, commerce and management, law, education, human sciences, health sciences or veterinary medicine. Apply online at unam.edu.na. UNAM, open your mind.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Brought to you by Premier Bet Namibia Totes. Create your account now at premierbet.com and use promo code Namibia264. Premier Bet, win big, win now.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone, brought to you by Premier Bet Namibia. Use promo code Namibia264 to create your account now. Take advantage of the 200% signing up bonus promotion. And so now, don't forget the trivia question. Call in and tell me when and where did the first Africa Youth Games take place. The only hint I can give is not in Southern Africa. But now I want us to listen to a panel that took place at last year's Africa Investment Forum. This was a panel on the business of sport on the continent. You know, these are some of the things that we talk about a lot here on the Eagle Sports Zone, but very rarely do we get it hosted on such a international platform, or forum rather. So let's take a listen to some continental leaders when it comes to the business of sport, and what they had to say in regards to the business of sport on the continent.
NBA. I played basketball at highest level, but not in the NBA. First of all, I'm very glad to be here. This is great. You know, Morocco is very special to me in my heart. Very honored to be here and very happy that sports is taking a growing position within the investment world. And for a good reason. Here is why. I believe, and I always say that, there's never been a better time to invest in sports in Africa. Never been a better time to invest in sports in Africa. Why? Because over the past 20 years, sports industry has shown growth rate, annual growth rate of 5% over the past 20 years. It's roughly 3 to 4% of the world GDP and is growing. In Africa, 0.5%, that's the value of sports contribution into Africa GDP. But we look and we witness a major shift in the game. The shift is more and more investment pouring into our industry across the entire value chain. Let me give you some example. $258 million, that's what has been spent for the Stade of Senegal, you know, the football stadium in Senegal. $104 million have been spent for the Kigali Arena. President Tshisekedi of DRC, Congo, has committed to also build the Kinshasa Arena. That's just infrastructure. In terms of talent development, we have major investment from our brothers from Egypt, the Mansour family, putting $100 million in the Right to Dream Academy. That's another example. Let's talk about merchandising. French company Decathlon posting double-digit figures in terms of growth across the continent. They recently opened another store in Johannesburg, South Africa. So we see that more and more investors are understanding the game and understanding that sports is a unit asset class. What do we mean by unit asset class is while sports contribute to the economic growth, creating jobs and value, it also very impactful from a global influence standpoint with great ambassadors, and it's very impactful from a social and societal standpoint as well. So sport is a huge catalyst when you think about sustainable growth.
So when you are making the description that you are making, I'm getting the sense of you are talking about another world. Are you talking about Africa?
I like that question. All the example I just gave you all in Africa, right?
Right.
I mentioned to you Senegal.
Yeah.
I mentioned to you Rwanda, Congo, South Africa. And I actually made a big mistake. I didn't mention Morocco. Over the past 20 years, Morocco has been consistently investing in youth development. We have the Centre National du Football, which is the football national center where they develop talents in Rabat, not far from here.
Yeah.
We have the AFCON coming up. We have the biggest stadium being built in Ben Sliman, not far again from here, 100,000 seats capacity for $500 million investment across the board. Not too long ago, I was in Tangier. The stadium is just amazing. And what I really like about this thing is, as I mentioned earlier, sports plays a role of catalyst, meaning that those major sporting events are not helping you to grow on the infrastructure side only,
yeah.
But you look at transportation, you look at accommodation, you look at businesses, you look at the entire economy, and we have to talk about tourism. You know, here in Morocco, tourism is 7% of the Morocco GDP, 7%.
Sure.
Last year, they broke a record, 14.5 million people visited Morocco, generating 104 billion dirhams, that's $10 million revenue. And the target is for them to keep on growing. And to do that, you need an innovative solution. Sports tourism is one of them.
So Claire, I mean, clearly, okay, things are beginning to happen here. Okay, great. So this is a world now where we talk about sustainability. And the question I really want to ask is, how do we ensure that what we are hearing, the Marakana of Africa being built here, one big project, that it's not doesn't become just one big project, nor another big project there, and then it all fizzles out. How do we make sure that what is happening is structured such that it is something that will be there in the future, i.e. it is sustainable across the continent, not in one country and not in one part of the continent?
I think one clear way of achieving that is having a league like ourselves. So the NBA...
Continental.
The NBA has invested in the Basketball Africa League, which is a Pan-African league. Every year there's a competition. We've done 4 seasons so far. 2025 will be our 5th season. In the whole entire system, as you go into the BAL, there's what we call the Road to BAL. So you have about 25 African countries that participate on average in the road to BAL, you narrow down to 12 countries that have their teams participating. We have countries that you'd never have even seen in sports competitions.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the new countries we have this year is Cape Verde, for example, participating in the road to BAL. We've had traditional countries like Senegal, Nigeria, Egypt, South Africa, that is very well known for rugby and soccer and cricket.
Yeah.
Has been participating in the Basketball Africa League. Burundi participated last year. And so we're seeing more and more countries. Central African Republic, Libya, those countries have been participating in BAL. And so the way to sustain this is to give the investments a pathway to utilize those investments.
Yeah.
So talent, previously, if you're very good at basketball or very good in football, you're quickly looking to leave the continent to find an opportunity in Europe.
You anticipate my next question.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but what we're doing by having the Basketball Africa League here is giving you no reason to leave the continent to get professional world-class sporting opportunities here.
Yeah.
We're seeing salaries improve of players in the Basketball Africa League. We're seeing infrastructure increase. He gave many examples of infrastructure improving on the continent. But the way to sustain that is to have leagues, competitions that stay on the continent,
yeah,
that are viable and that actually pay talent as they should.
And that's my next question. How do we ensure that what we are building is able to attract the support and the capital that we require? We know that when we talk about remuneration figures for Africa versus the rest of the world, we are nowhere near anywhere. I'm putting that question to you. I'll put it to Will as well.
Well, as I've said, when we see the Basketball Africa League every year improving, we're seeing more and more investments and more opportunities to actually pay talent well. What we're also seeing is that at the team level, there's more investments than we've seen before. An example I'd like to give is Nairobi City Thunders. This is a new team that has just qualified for BAL, you know, to play in the NBA league that's on the continent, the Basketball Africa League. Kenya had never participated in BAL. They'd never qualified to participate in BAL since all the four seasons we've had recently. Nairobi City Thunders has now qualified to be part of BAL. What made them qualify? Investment.
Sure.
So Nairobi City Thunders went out and really took this as an investment opportunity. They went, raised money. They have private investors that are putting money. And that ability to invest made them be able to acquire good players. They got some of the best players on the continent. They hired them. They invested in, you know, accessing facilities in order to get their training on board.
Yeah.
And all of this, getting good coaches and getting good managers,
yeah,
all of that has resulted in them being very competitive and they're qualifying for the BAL. So what it takes is the right investments in getting the players, training, building the capacity of the teams.
Yeah.
And when you show that there's a business opportunity, investors will invest, like we've seen in Nairobi City Thunders.
Yeah.
We saw that in the Cape Town Tigers, an example also. And we're getting more and more private investments going in the teams. And when they do that, talent is paid well and sustainability is more possible.
Will?
Yeah, look, I think it's a great question. With regard to infrastructure, I have a different views. I understand everybody's looking at big time infrastructure, big time stadium, and so on and so forth. Look, you know, in basketball, I play basketball, as you know, and in basketball, we often say you have to be true to the game. You have to be true to the game means that you need to know your role. In football, it's the same thing. You know, if you play defense, you play defense. We're not asking you to score 30 points, right? With regards to our leadership, it's the same thing. We've witnessed countries in Africa where they will be building 5 or 10th stadium, 50,000 seats on average, whereas the local population is not even 10 million. So what do you do after that? You've been spending hundreds of millions. What do you do after that? You know, so it is important to be true to your game and to understand who you are within African context. So the second thing is maybe you should consider, and we see that with the FIFA World Cup, to share the wealth, meaning that one country can host with others. So we have multiple hosting opportunities. That's what's going to happen here in 2030 with the World Cup, right? But Godfrey, I think when we look at infrastructure, we need to think at infrastructure differently. And we're going to look at it from a business standpoint. Do you know that the money that is made in sports is actually coming from the daily practice and consumption by the household? It's not coming from professional sports. It's coming from Africans daily consuming and practicing sports. That's where the wealth is. What does that mean? It means that we don't need that many 50,000 seats. We rather need smaller venues, smaller sporting infrastructures that's going to address the daily need of those Africans' households. That is where, to me, the key is.
If I could just add something around the use of infrastructure, I think you asked that question before. How do you make sure they're not wasted infrastructure? I think one thing we've seen from basketball arenas is that they actually use, I'll give the example of Beka Arena in Rwanda, about a quarter of the time of their use is in sports. Three quarters of the time, they're actually using the facilities for something else. And one of the reasons that arenas get really full, in Rwanda as an example, is religious events. So you have pastors coming and hiring the event to have their religious events. You have political events, meetings, big gatherings. You have technology hackathons. You have all sorts of users. And so sports facilities can be used beyond sports, and that makes them really lucrative. You have about 200 days in a year when these arenas can be full. In countries, developed countries, they're actually full, you know, 2 years in advance. That's what I hear from sports arenas. So the infrastructure should be looked at comprehensively, not just for sports, but for multi-purpose. And that's how you really make money from them in a sustainable way.
I want to, your thoughts on Will's suggestion that when we're thinking about the infrastructure for sports, we should not be thinking of, Will, I'm sorry to have to put it this way, but we should not be thinking of the Maracanas of Africa. We should be thinking about more intimate, smaller size sports infrastructure.
But Frey, if I may say, what I just say precisely is we need to have a holistic approach. While we have big time stadium, we also need to complement that.
Let the big picture start.
Exactly.
Okay.
You need both. You definitely need both. Because for some of the competitions we have, like the BAL, you have to have those world-class infrastructure. But of course, you have different users. You say, talked about practice, talked about, you know, smaller competitions, smaller federations. Yes, you need both. But to be able to have the world-class competitions, you definitely need big infrastructure, but not in isolation of the small ones.
In part, you have started to answer of my discussion, and this was the question around what kind of models we require in order to make sports sustainable and successful. Let's talk a little bit about what that model looks like from let's spread it across all the sports, really. Mm-hmm. Will, I'm starting with you.
Sorry, I didn't hear
the kind of models that we require in order to build successful franchises in terms of sports.
Yeah, look, there's multiple models. I think obviously from a financial standpoint, I think everybody has to play his role. When we look at development banks, they need to help with access to capital, which is the major hindering to the growth of the continent. Cost of capital is another one. But when we go beyond that, I think what we expect from the development banks is for them to help with de-risking. Unfortunately, there's sometimes a negative perception when it comes to investment in sports. And we need those development banks to help with de-risking, mitigating the risk, and sometimes insuring it. And you can do it leveraging on your balance sheet, for example. I'm sure the investor would know how to do that. So that's from a financial standpoint, and that's from the public perspective, right?
Right.
Now, from a private sector perspective, I think people need to look at the key segment within the market, and there are so many. Sports tech is one of them. I think sports tech present amazing upside. You know, it was a $8 billion business worldwide in 2018, and it's projected to be $31 billion by 2024. So looking at certain segment of the market and making sure that we leverage them. Obviously, private, public-private partnerships is a critical one, and I'm sure everybody would agree. Maybe when we look at all of these, I think there's one thing that is very, very critical, and that's observed, and I think Claire was mentioning that earlier. It is so important that people understand the game. People have the skill set to understand what they're doing. From a governance standpoint, from an investment standpoint, people truly need to study the market and understand what they're doing. Yeah.
Well, in terms of models, I look at maybe three different categories. The first category is infrastructure and facilities. I think especially for the ones that host big competitive events, like arenas, stadiums, etc., I see two pathways for investing in those. The main one is public funding. because these are very huge long-term investments. You're talking about $100 million and more. You're looking at a payback period of 15, 20 years. And so I think the public sector has a key role there. However, I think there's room also for public-private partnerships to do that, either government partnering with private sector and government helping to relieve the private sector that needs to be paid a little bit faster than the 15, 20 years. What we've seen, for example, is the government builds infrastructure, brings private sector to manage it. And the private sector makes it viable because they're managing it like a business, they're hosting, they're marketing the facility and able to make money. So that's for infrastructure and facilities. And I think development financial institutions can participate through lending to governments. FDB, FDB is here. I know TDB, for example, has invested in Stadium and many others. IFC has just partnered with Helios, for example, to set a sports investment facility for infrastructure. So we see these kinds of partnerships and being de-risked by long-term financing coming from DFIs and governments. But there's a second part, which is around capacity building. So talent building. We have a program called Future Pros, for example, at the BAL. I think that can be a mixture of philanthropic. We've seen philanthropy like Mastercard Foundation investing in talent. We've seen UN, we've seen World Bank and all those financial institutions, AFDB in capacity building. I think they can participate in building the talent and helping to see more people work in the sports sector. But there's a third part, which is entrepreneurs in sports. And we're seeing more and more entrepreneurs coming in sports. We're seeing investment in digital solutions. At the NBA Africa, we started something called Triple Double Accelerator, where we identified solutions that support the sports sector and creative sector. We announced our first edition beginning of this year, and we got 700 applications from Africans who want to participate in the sports and creative sector. They have solutions in ticketing. They have solutions in live events. They have solutions in AI that can support industries. And for there, I think the best model for financing is really getting venture capital, getting private equity, getting financial institutions to invest in these sports entities.
Going with my thinking, because I wanted to say, yes, in the past, what we've seen traditionally is that governments are the ones that come in and put up this infrastructure, and it's been their responsibility. But we are also in an era where we know we are increasingly saying governments' finances are constrained, and they've got many other demands that they need to satisfy, and we need to get private money into sports. Now, how do we get it into the infrastructure side? And you have touched in part on it. I want to talk a little bit more about it, and then I need to talk about what we'll raise around the consumption of sports and how we should look at it differently and connect it to social media, the age that we are in and how we make that work. But let's talk a little bit about private money in infrastructure development. How do we make that infrastructure attractive to a Dangote to invest in the same way that he thinks about that big refinery in Lagos?
Maybe not Dangote as an example, but we do have a Nigerian investor called Amusan, who's actually one of the investors in NB Africa. He's investing in an arena in Nigeria. And we went to Nigeria beginning of this year, I believe it was around April this year, and we had the groundbreaking for an arena. And so, and he's visited some of the arenas on the continent to see how they function and to see the business case that there is. So I think that's changing, and we're seeing more and more private investment, not just government investments, investing in infrastructure.
Are we able to create these structures that would enable private money to think about sports opportunity in the same way that they think about, I mean, I know we need to eat, but in the same way they begin to think about setting up a plant to make conflicts or whatever it is?
Actually, no. Godfrey, you know, sports is actually better than those plants. Sports is much better than building just the plants. Sports is much, much better.
In terms of returns?
In more than returns. So sports is better in multiple ways. As I mentioned earlier, from an event standpoint, sports is an amazing accelerator for development. It helps you develop your infrastructure, yes, but not sporting infrastructure only. It helps you develop roads, helps you develop accommodation, hotels for tourism. It helps you develop health destination, clinics, and so on and so forth. We see our brothers in Cote d'Ivoire, that's what they did during AFCON. $1.2 billion has been spent across the board from San Pedro, Abidjan, Bouaké for global development. So yes, sports is a unique asset class, as I mentioned earlier. Sports is a unique asset class. It does bring
financial benefit. It helps you from a global influence standpoint. I think Rwanda or Morocco have been doing a great job with promoting their destination through sports. And it also helps you from a social impact standpoint. We will all agree that sports is definitely transformative. It's an amazing transformative vehicle for youth. So you see, very few assets will offer so many features.
Okay.
And by the way, sports is projected to grow at least 3 to 4 percentage points above GDP in Africa. So if GDP is growing by 3 to 4%, you're seeing an additional 3% growth. So sports is growing faster than GDP. That makes it attractive for business.
When you say sports, break it down for me.
So sports industry in general. So that includes the economics of sports. So hospitality, sports events, tournaments, okay. The money that you make from sports is actually growing faster than GDP.
Yeah. Talk, Will, if you will, please, about the idea that you introduced at the beginning, where you spoke about the consumption of sports and how the bulk of the money that's consumed in sports is actually not in the direct watching of sports itself. Is that what you said?
Yeah, so what I was trying to describe earlier is that, yes, the professional sports is huge, it's aspirational, it makes people dream, and it's big money. And we should definitely push for that, especially from an African continent where we have a unique opportunity to create authentic sporting content. You know, look at Canal Plus. Canal Plus just acquired a MultiChoice for $2.9 million.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have plans to develop studios, African content, and so on and so forth, right? They actually sponsoring, you were talking about Americana earlier. This is a property that they're looking at, right? So we have a unique opportunity to create authentic sporting content. We should push for more of the BL, more of football major events on the continent. What I was saying is that those events, for example, the AFCON, it comes every 2 years.
Yeah.
Those major events are not on a daily basis. So what I'm saying is that when you look at the wealth created in sports, the majority of that wealth is actually not coming from those mega events. It's coming from the daily practice and consumption of sports by the household. Sure. What does that mean? It means that me as a sports fan, I have to buy clothes for me or my kids to go and practice sports, right?
Yeah.
I need to take a membership in the fitness center, for example, to go and practice that, right? If I like to watch games on TV, traditionally I will either take a sub at Canal Plus or other TV providers and OTTs. Well, I hope we're going to talk about OTTs as well.
Yeah.
But I can also go to my favorite bar with my friend to watch the game on giant screen. And that means consumption as well. So what I'm trying to say is that we are a 1.4 billion people market. We are young, 19 years average age, and we're going to be the biggest population in the world in the near future. By 2050, one human being out of four is African. So we need to focus on the daily consumption of those people.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to say.
What about the disruption? You mentioned MultiChoice. And of course, we know the challenges that MultiChoice has been facing as a result of the disruption that's been caused by the OTTs that you're talking about. But also the different consumption, the different ways in which people are now consuming television. How do we, one, embrace that disruption and use it to grow sports on the continent? And also, what about social media? I'm in television and we are being disrupted hugely, I can tell you, in terms of our distribution channels and our ability to reach our audiences.
I'll start? Look, Godfrey, there's one thing that is very critical to understand on the continent is, number one, the mobile phone consumption and market penetration. Africans do a lot of things with this now. They do a lot of things. They do call, text. They do socialize with it. Sometimes they can pay their bills with it. And most importantly, they get entertained with this. What does that mean is that it means that there's a major shift from a content standpoint that people, right holders, but also broadcasters, media platform that you mentioned, MultiChoice earlier, they need to understand that and they need to shift to that. We see example of ESPN, for example, in the US, where we now have ESPN Plus very early. They have developed platforms for people to consume sports on their mobile. And that's the youth. The young people of Africa, they like to do that. And that's what we need to understand. So yes, Canal Plus acquiring multi-source, as you mentioned, it's a major shift on the continent.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I think it's just the beginning. We're going to see more and more moves like that. Obviously, New World TV from Togo, as you know, they've made a big splash on the market acquiring the football rights, World Cup football rights, and recently contracted $242 million credit line from the DFI. Yeah. So I think when we look at OTT, because I think that's what you were mentioning, and social media, we need to understand that, at least that's in my opinion, people talk about the fourth revolution being technology. Fourth industrial revolution to me is technology, yes, but it's actually IP, intellectual property. The intellectual property and technology allow a kid from Bulawayo, Zimbabwe, or from Yaoundé, Cameroon, to produce content with this and to put it on platform like YouTube and make money. It allows a kid from a village to produce content, put it online, and expose his talent and potentially be recruited by Chelsea, Arsenal, and so on and so forth.
Sure.
And from an African perspective, this is a major vehicle to actually leapfrog and catch up with the rest of the world.
Absolutely, absolutely. Claire, we need to wrap. Your thoughts?
Well, I think that the evidence is there. How many people own TVs on African continent? You're talking about 40, 50 million households. You're among the few. How many people have mobile phones? You talk about 700 million. MTN alone, 300 million. So the opportunity is really there for Africa. And at the NBA, we understand that, and we are also moving with that direction. We have our own app. It's called the League Pass. You can download the app, well, subscribe to the app, and watch your games on your phone. Your sons do. Great. All your sons, please, and daughters. And then we also have seen growth in social media platforms. You talked about YouTube. When we showed our games last year, BAL, we had one of the fastest growth rates, 230% growth rate on YouTube channel that were watching our game through YouTube. So that's really changing, and we have to move with that. Our new global media deal at NBA included Amazon in recognition of streaming being the future.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%, is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone as we sign off this evening on another edition of the Eagle Sports Zone. That was a conversation that took place at the Africa Investment Forum in 2024, and they were discussing various aspects about the business of sport on the continent. And one of the highlights, in my opinion, of this conversation was when they asked, you know, what would it take for someone like Dangote to view sport like he views one of his big refineries. That's the key, and that's the key question that every African country, essentially, every African government in charge should ask themselves. What do we need to do so that sport can be viewed like this in our country? There's a few countries that have figured it out on the continent. That's South Africa, that's Morocco, that's, I want to say, Rwanda, to an extent, that's Maybe we can add Senegal to that list. But I think after that, we're done. In terms of countries that have truly been able to shape and mold their sporting industry to look to operate in that manner, to be viewed in that manner. And these are the things that contribute to tie it all together, that contribute to having athletes perform well at things like the Africa Youth Games, is everything that you've heard in the past hour or so. But nonetheless, we'll be back next week, same time, same place here on the Eagle Sports Zone. Thank you for tuning in. And for the trivia question, the answer is 2010 is when the first Africa Youth Games took place, and it took place in none other than Morocco, where this year's AFCON will also be taking place beginning in a little under 2 weeks now. So exciting things happening on the continent. This has been another edition of the Eagle Sports Zone. We will see you same time, same place. Don't forget tomorrow, The Villager will be published. The Villager will be published. So if you haven't subscribed yet, send a WhatsApp message to 081-200-4144. That's 081-200-4144. Make sure to save the number as a contact and add your email address if you'd like to receive it via email as well. But this has been another edition of the Eagle Sports Zone. We'll be back same time, same place next week, Sunday.